Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. I'm going to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. You can get a house at affordable rates, very affordable rates, by calling 1-800-638-7781, even for second-time home buyers. We also remind you and thank all of our listeners who made an investment into WEAA here during the Mark Steiner Show and during our fall membership drive in general. We just say thank you so much. We are still short of our overall station goal of $150,000, and invite those who have not to please now make your pledge of support, because your contribution makes a huge difference. You are the public and public radio, and keep this place flowing and growing. So please make your pledge now at WEAA.org. Secure online pledge, safe. WEAA.org, and show your support for WEAA, your public radio station. We have another one of our Urbanite radio conversations in this half hour. We are joined in studio by, well, not in studio, we're joined from England, actually, from London, by Michael Jack, winner of the Urbanite Open City Competition. Tracy Ward, publisher of the Urbanite Baltimore, who came up with this Urbanite Open City Competition. And Henry Kay, executive director for transit development at the MTA and Open City Competition juror of the Red Line. And we've had a lot of shows over the last few years on the Red Line, debates, arguments, fights, hopes, dreams, no good, yes, it's wonderful, it's here and coming. So we'll talk about all that and how this may be uniting communities throughout the city. So welcome to the three of you. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Can you're there with us, Michael Jack?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Welcome, and congratulations.
Thank you.
And so all of you can join us here at 410-319-8888 as well. A lot of you who listen to the show, I know, live along the Red Line communities and all the communities represented on the Red Line. We'd love to hear your thoughts. So even though, Tracy, I have to start with you. I'm sorry for that. So tell us about the competition and where it began. What is this?
I think we started the Urbanite project in 2007, possibly. And the whole notion of the Urbanite project is really to showcase the talent and skills of Baltimore residents. So we started out with a project where we invited people actually to participate, and basically we gave them two pages of the magazine and we asked them to kind of dream something up. Since then, we've evolved, and we're now doing a competition. We did a competition for the first time this year where we wanted to work with an institutional partner on a very important issue for Baltimore, and transit is absolutely one of the most important issues that we could focus on. And getting the Red Line is going to be critical to the future health and well-being of the city. Yet, doing that, of course, there's going to be challenges, particularly during the construction phase, and much of this is going to be above ground. So what the Urbanite Project really does and the competition does is it leverages talents. We invited people to come up with their ideas. The best ideas always come from the community on how they might mitigate some of those challenges.
And one of these best ideas happened to come from London, England, which
That's
is not
right.
on the Red Line.
A long shot.
So please, Michael Jack, talk to us about what you designed.
It's a sort of open-ended project where I had this idea that stations could, in anticipation of the sort of the physical reality of being connected up by this train line, could sort of have a sort of to and fro conversation by residents or community groups from one area taking photographs and then displaying them at the other station, and then they in turn would respond to them, and over time it would become a sort of conversation, and it would kind of develop and like take on a life of its own.
So how's this going to play itself out? How are we going to see this playing itself out all along the Red Line, Henry Kay? Go ahead, Michael.
Well,
go ahead.
I thought that because there are always going to be hoardings around construction sites.
Right.
And, I mean, they will vary as the construction proceeds. Some stations will start earlier and some later. And the these hoardings would be used to display billboards with these photographs on them. So quite simple technology of just blowing up photographs that people might take on their phones and pasting them up on billboards. And so if you were in, say, Allendale, you would see photographs that were taken by people who lived or worked in the or went to school in the area of the Baltimore MARC, and they in turn would see photographs that people in Allendale had taken and submitted. And the photographs would be chosen based on some sort of brief, and the brief might be set as a question by the people in the station that you were twinned with.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people who submitted the photographs could, maybe through some simple online democratic system, choose which photographs that their group had taken to represent how they were responding to this brief.
So so when will this begin, Michael Jack? I mean Henry Kay.
Well, the Red Line is a very large project. It's it stretches across the region. It's more than 14 miles long. At this point, we have a construction schedule that would have us starting around 2015. But because of the substantial construction involved, we'd be going all the way to 2020 before it'd be open. So
the Red Line will not be open until 2020.
Not until 2020. The idea is that it would probably open in phases, but, you know.
Might have to wheel me on there by then.
Of course, well, hopefully not. I'm planning to be there.
I hope not anyway.
But no, it's a very substantial project. I mean, as I've said, we have to move a lot of dirt. There are the surface running portions, which have been the focus of most of the community conversation, but
yes,
it does include a total of 4 miles of tunnel, which include under downtown Baltimore is, 60 or 70 feet below the street, crossing – places like the Howard Street Tunnel and the Jones Falls, and keeping away from the harbor front in terms of environmental impacts. So it's a very complex project. There are 5 underground stations, each one a block long with, access to them. There's a block-long underground tunnel between the new Inner Harbor Station and the existing Charles Center Station. So that's a lot of work to do, and it takes some time to do it. But Michael's exactly right. I mean, it'll take place. That won't all be occurring along the entire line at one time. It'll be done in phases. Some of the surface work, which is most visible, will be done much more quickly than that. But it certainly will include some type of screening of that construction. I mean, it's done for safety. It's done, to make the work more easy to control. It's also done to, protect communities from some of the impacts of the actual work. So Michael's focus, we were very impressed by Michael's focus on that particular aspect of the project. Those walls are temporary, in nature. So we thought he had a wonderful idea for how to use them as a way to, articulate, one of the most wonderful opportunities of a project like the Red Line, which is to connect communities that otherwise, aren't familiar with each other.
Otherwise, it just stops.
Yeah.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, folks, if you live in, I'm just curious, if you're out there and want to join us now, whether you live in Allentown or Harlem Park or Edmondson Village or over by in Highlandtown, Greektown or Canton, wherever you might live, Fells Point, join us with your thoughts about what you hear here. 410-319-8888. I have to ask you, Michael Jack, before we move on to our other guests here as well. You lived in London, so how did you find out about this?
Well, I found about it online. There are a few websites which sort of bring together competitions which are aimed at architects. And I don't enter very many of them, but I liked the way that this. I liked the brief for this one. I thought it wasn't too prescriptive. Sometimes these sorts of competitions are. It's almost like the organisers already know what they want before they put it out there. And I thought this one was. There's something a little bit different about this one. So that's what attracted me to it.
And it is very. I think it is very. I'm sorry. Finish, Michael. I mean to cut you off. That's what you were saying.
Oh, I mean, normally it's people, the competitions, people expect a building at the end of it. But I think architects are trained to think about the other design problems as well as just how to design a building. And I think it's this sort of question, which is similar to architecture in a way, is it's pretty interesting. It was an enjoyable problem to think about for a couple of months.
So, I mean, I wonder where this came from. Where did this come from? I mean, this idea of you've done a lot of covering of the Red Line, at least 7 or 8, 9 articles, I remember, and we've done a number of them on the show as Urbanite Radio Discussions. Mm-hmm. But what spurred this on?
Well, I think we recognize, again, the importance of this particular opportunity for Baltimore. I should mention, we did this in partnership, by the way, with some really great local organizations. There's an organization called the D Center, and they're mostly, many are architects, but there are other folks that are involved in the design field. And they really like to sort of puzzle over interesting design issues. And they were very much a part of coming up with this particular concept. We also partnered with the Baltimore City Department of Transportation and also partnered with MICA students. There was a class at MICA that actually focused on this and helped develop the brief. So it seemed like a good issue for us to explore. All the potential issues around it sort of touch deeply in terms of sort of, you know, everything is local. It's going to impact businesses, residents. It's opportunity for connection, but there's also this sort of dangerous period of potential disconnection as well, and that's why we wanted to focus on that.
So does this begin before it happens? Is this going to happen now, before the Red Line goes into effect?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question, something I think it's worth exploring. I mean, we set out this question that, you know, Michael and the other folks who were in the competition responded to. We didn't really make any commitments in terms of what would be done with their work. You know, we tried to get them to think about the problem and use it as a way to you know, sort of further, you know, the goals of the Red Line, kind of what it means in the city and what we all, you know, want for the city. But we also didn't necessarily ask for ideas that were literal and could be implemented necessarily. And I think that's what Michael's referring to when he says it was a very open-ended question and something that's much broader than architects normally grapple with. And as a result of that, we got a very wide variety of submissions. Some couldn't be implemented. I mean, they were very abstract and artistic, you know, in nature. They addressed the problem in their own way, mm-hmm. but it would have been possible to construct them. I mean, it so happens that Michael's proposal could be constructed. And what we'll do is, as we get closer to that, we have a better sense of, you know, what the nature of the construction will be and what type of screening, you know, he's using the word hoarding, would be necessary, then we'll look for opportunities to use it. And I, you know, assuming he's interested, we'll go back and find him at that time and get him to help us develop the concept a little further and sort of turn it into reality.
First, I think we have to explain a term here, because I wasn't sure what it meant either. Hoarding. First, I thought it was a misprint. You meant boarding, like boarding up places.
Yeah.
But yeah. Boarding is not hoarding.
Yeah, hoarding is not so much a term of art for us at the MTA either. But I noticed that a number of the entrants use that term, and it could be, and Michael, you should respond to this. I mean, it could be a term that's more common outside the United States. I figured it out from context, but it's not what I'm accustomed to. Michael, maybe you could define it for
Michael
us.
Michael Jack.
I did wonder, actually, whether it was, whether you used the word the same way that we did. And I was looking at one or two of the other entrants, and because they'd used it as well, I assumed it was normal. But perhaps they're not American either.
Well, that's right. They're not.
So it
refers to temporary walls that would be placed around construction sites to protect the construction site, you know, from the community and vice versa. So it's a, you know, these are barriers, if you want to use kind of a negative word. But I think it's a, you know, I liked the word, actually, because it was sort of made us all think, you know, about the opportunity that they present as well. And that's exactly what Michael explored in his submission.
So people along this 14-mile stretch that covers, I mean, neighborhoods from west to east and south will be seeing this when? When will the first hoarding
begin? You know, we would start in 2015, and the kinds of activities that happen at the beginning are utility relocation. I mean, that can be very significant when you're talking about a tunnel, and there's digging in streets for that. And so, you know, you can protect those sites with cones, and, you know, but if to the extent that, you know, we're digging large holes in the ground, and we will be downtown, I mean, block-long, 70-foot-deep holes, you know, they're going to require fencing around them. So, you know, once that work gets underway, and I can't say precisely when, but it would be sometime after 2015 and conclude sometime well before 2020. But it could be a period of a year or two on any particular site where we would be working in that way, and it would be a chance for Michael's idea to be explored.
So again, back to the idea. Part of it is the communities are going to really determine what goes up. Am I correct? Communities involved in determining what...
That's the idea, yes.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
Yes. I didn't want it to be too prescriptive. I thought it would just... I'd leave it to for people to make it their own and just see where it led. And so I thought perhaps that at each of the 20 stations at one point or another, whenever they were involved in it, that there might be some existing sort of institutions or schools or community groups or nearby offices, or perhaps a local restaurant could get their customers to contribute something. And there might be one person who could sort of take on the role of being a curator to kind of draw it together a bit and sort of be the person who kind of sort of tended it and took care of it. Because it would need some, it probably needs some fairly advanced sort of internet website thing for it to run properly.
So, and you're talking about a curator in each neighborhood, in a sense.
Yes, I mean, imagine there's people already there who'd be willing to get involved and take it on and see what they could make of it, yeah.
This seems to me in some ways akin to what many people have been thinking about lately, and which we'll be doing another show about in the next week in one of our neighborhoods here in Baltimore, the whole idea of place. And the sense of place and what it means to be and how art and architecture and our lives are wrapped around that together. This is in that world, right, Michael?
Yes, exactly. It's sort of drawing out the characteristics and identity and sort of attributes of the areas that are going to be connected up, and you learn things about other parts of the city that you weren't really, perhaps new things that you weren't aware of before.
So, I mean, is this going to be actively kind of pushed in order to really bring people from these kind of disparate communities together?
Yeah, I think for it to be successful, you'd have to do that. I mean, I think Michael's concept really successfully captured two wonderful ideas, which is the stations are about places. They're very much, you know, we very much would like them to be the living room of the community that they're in. If there's a station in Allendale, we want the Allendale community to really own that place and feel, you know, proud of it. But at the same time, that place is on a 14-mile line that's connected to many other places that are otherwise far away, I mean, literally and figuratively. And so his idea of kind of matching up pairs of communities that could trade images with each other that express their own values and the things that they love about their own place, we thought was a wonderful way. It's a metaphor for what transit is. It's something that is about your community and supports it and makes it better, but it also connects you to another place. So to do this and during the construction process, in anticipation of the real connections that'll be made later by the line itself, we thought was a really wonderful idea.
I mean, this is also, I think, in some ways, Tracy, at the heart and soul of what you try to do at the Urbanite.
I think so. Obviously, the place that we focus on is the city itself, largely the region, but the city mostly. And I happen to think Baltimore is a pretty awesome place, and yet we do have some really difficult challenges. So one of the things we try to do in the magazine is sort of highlight those challenges, but doing it in a way that's constructive and more inspirational, so that we can sort of lock arms and do the work that we need to do, while also appreciating all the amazingness that Baltimore has to offer.
Mm-hmm. I mean, are we about to say something, Andy?
No, go ahead.
I mean, it seems that this is a, it's such a novel idea that we've not tried in this community before. I mean, it's given that we have along this line are both in terms of class, race, ethnicity, are very diverse neighborhoods. I mean, it just represents so much of humanity along this line. They'd be interesting to watch how this comes together and how the art kind of infects and affects the others, which I figure was probably what was behind what you were trying to do, Michael Jack.
Yes. I mean, I had to a certain extent, I had to leave it a little bit vague because I haven't been to Baltimore.
That's even funnier.
I compared it to the Central metro line on the London Underground, which is the red one that goes from east to west through the middle. And imagined if that was being constructed over the next 5 years, and the variety of different areas and rich and poor and financial districts and suburbs and things. And I'm sure Baltimore has sort of much of the same sort of variety and different types of areas as well. And so it was a good way of thinking about it, I think.
And actually, Michael Jack, who designed this, the article is in this month's Urbanite. It's called 20 Stations, 20 Questions, Using Photos to Hide Construction, but really using photos and art to bring communities together all across this red line, which I think is just an incredible idea, an idea put forward by Urbanite Baltimore, to kind of bring communities together and be creative in how we talk to communities across this city, which what Urbanite does every month. Not just saying it because we have a partnership, I'm saying because it's real, or we wouldn't have them as partners. And so so I think this has been great. Michael Jack, I look forward to one day meeting you when you do come to Baltimore when this is launched. It'll be a pleasure to make your acquaintance.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Michael Jack is a winner of the Urbanite Open City Competition. He's an architect based in London. You can see this in this month's issue of the Urbanite. Tracy Ward's with us, publisher of Urbanite. Henry Kay has joined us from the Transit Department, Executive Director of Transit Development at MTA, and one of the jurors for this Open City Competition. And I want to thank you all for being here in the studios.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you. This is great. Can't wait to see this burst into life. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you. This is one of our Urbanite radio stories, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most, with daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more, which can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com. And we're going to take a break and come back from this break. We're going to be joined by the Theater Action Group, Sheila Gaskins, Brian Francoise, and Natalia Brusilovsky, who are putting up this four-part series across Baltimore in different communities to talk about race through theater and art and get into an interactive dialogue with communities who help create that art. A fascinating discussion with three of Baltimore's grassroots artists. So stay with us, and we'll be right back for that, and don't go away.